it's not just coffee. It's about how you approach it and balance it with the rest of your life, no matter if you're a beginner, enthusiast, or a professional. So whether you're a professional, you know, truck driver, or...
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
That's the best.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast, the podcast for people who care about coffee. My name is Brian Bikey, and joining me, as always, my co-host, the mighty man of the macro, Ryan Sheely.
What's up, buddy?
Not a lot.
My fanboy mode is active right now, by the way.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
I don't know. I don't even know what that means.
Fanboy mode. We've got a really cool guest.
Oh, my gosh.
Who I'm super excited about.
I thought I heard, like, some birds that we don't normally have on the backing tracks. Who do we have with us?
I heard a tractor, I think. Hey, guys. This is Jared from Ruby. Nice to talk with you. Thanks for having me.
What's up, Jared?
Thanks for being
Thank
on with
you.
Us.
Thank you.
Brian, you did a terrible job of introducing him. You made him introduce himself.
I did. I next time I'll work on that. I'll stop talking about how excited I am about our guest.
Thank you, guys.
Anyway, we as we're kind of going through our series of balancing coffee, we wanted to bring somebody in the professional world onto the show with us to give a perspective from that side, and somebody that we both look up to and kind of admire in that realm that seems to be good about balancing life with coffee in the coffee industry is Jared. So we're glad to have him on. Jared, we always start the show by talking about what we're brewing. So I will turn to you first, if it's okay to put the pressure on and ask you what's
sure,
been delicious
yeah.
lately.
Well, right now I'm drinking a cup of Colombia Aguacate. It's a really sweet, balanced, juicy coffee. This is also a coffee that I enjoy for, I guess, some sentimental reasons. This is one of the first coffees that I bought for the Ruby menu about 2 years ago, exactly. It's quite lovely. It's from Nariño. It's from a great producer group. And I think this is our fifth lot that we've got from them. We also have a single producer farmer day lot coming out probably in about a month or something. So that's exciting too.
What's your preferred brew method? Like, what's your go-to, or maybe like, what are you drinking the aguacate on right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, what's funny is around here we have this this Curtis brewer that we like quite a bit, and so I've actually
is that the Gold Cup?
Well, it's got the Gold Cup technology, but it's not the Gold Cup single cup brewer. It's just a air pot brewer, you know, or batch brewer. But I just last week added a liter batch, and I've been playing around with that a little bit. So I'm drinking a cup of aguacate that I brewed on the Curtis brewer as a liter brew.
Nice.
Yeah. So I like that quite a bit. I don't know. We brew a lot of Kalita waves here at the shop. I'm outside of Ruby right now in Nelsonville. So we brew a lot of Kalitas here. One of my employees who works with me part-time, just had a birthday, so I bought her an AeroPress. So I've been revisiting AeroPress with her a little bit.
That's always an experience.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I'm drinking. What about you guys? What are you drinking?
So I have been enjoying, actually, just this morning, I just started brewing it for the first time, the Supersonic Washed Ethiopia Kacheri. I don't know. You know, last year we've talked a bit briefly about the varieties of washed Ethiopian coffees over the last harvest, and then this year, you know, as being slightly different. Not that we would expect them always to be the same, since coffee is seasonal and all of that. But it's this Ethiopia Kacheri is really super juicy and sweet and black tea, like plum, and it's got a lot of that deep, juicy stone fruit sweetness to it, and then it has that like bergamot kind of black tea like finish. Super good, super sweet, really balanced. I brewed it up this morning on the Kalita 185, which, you know, always tends to kind of impart its own, I don't know, smoothness, I guess, to the body, or roundness to the body. So super good.
It's the sexy sax man of brewers.
Oh yeah. I've been enjoying most of the coffees that I've had on the Kalita 185. Just since I've recently gotten one and started visiting coffees on it.
What was your point about this year's Ethiopian coffees versus last year's?
Good question. So we've sort of gone back and forth in some of our discussions about, you know, early on, a lot of the washed Ethiopians didn't really feel like they were, I don't know, maybe had as much explosiveness or sweetness or something seemed to be missing from like the last harvest washed mm-hmm. Ethiopians and then these.
I thought a lot of them seemed to just carry a little bit more spice and less of the, I don't want to say playfulness because it wasn't always like that, but just a lot of times they were just really ramped up, sweet, a lot of fruit notes. And I think that changed to be a little bit more refined and then carried a lot more spice. And again, this was kind of as Ethiopians were kind of coming in new crop.
I've enjoyed some of the more recent washed Ethiopians that I've gotten in as much, if not sometimes even more than the ones that I had last season.
One thing that I think is interesting to just consider is that sometimes the early arrival Ethiopian coffees aren't always the best ones. And, yeah. You know, nonetheless, I think a lot of people are anxious to release them when they come in.
Sure.
You know, myself included. And so, you know, that's just something that sometimes, you know, those early arrivals in May or June can be from the earlier part of the harvest and may not be as complex or nuanced or explosive as some of the stuff from the meat of the harvest that doesn't arrive until a little bit later.
See, and that makes a lot of sense because I picked up and really started paying attention to washed Ethiopian coffees probably toward the end of the last harvest. So I didn't mm-hmm. really, I wasn't really into it early on. So this is kind of, you know, my first time back around really paying attention to it.
Awesome.
Brian, what are you brewing?
So lately I've been enjoying this Honduran coffee from Phil and Sebastian, and they're a Canadian roaster, and it's their Margarito Herrera. I think the brewing on the Gino, I've been brewing a lot on the Gino lately. That's what I usually do in the mornings or periodically throughout the day. It was probably my favorite brew of it so far. And just, I don't have a ton of experience with Honduras coffees. I think I had a couple of years previously, and sometimes they just didn't hit a profile that I really jived on a lot. But as I've grown in brewing and understanding coffee and trying to explore coffee for what it is, in addition to just how good this one is, I think it's kind of, it's just been a really big hit here. So it has a lot of sweetness that at first it reminds me of some of these washed Ethiopians this year. It's a little tropical. It's got a lot of clarity, complexity, but then it kind of cools into just a sweet body that reminds me of not only grape candy sweetness, which is interesting, but just a big warm pecan pie or chess pie. Do you guys have chess pie where you are?
I don't.
No, sir.
So I don't know if it was a Louisville thing or if it was a Ohio thing. I've been in both those places for a long period of time. But so chess pie is essentially just pecan pie without the pecans. It's just got that it's just the crust and that gooey stuff, right?
Wow. Gooey.
So it's just, you know, as this coffee is cooling, it's just warm and sweet and it's just been exceptional. I've almost brewed up every last bit of what I have, and it just continues to be really tasty. I've been impressed with a lot of coffees from Honduras this year. So this podcast, again, we have Jared on for a reason, and we're continuing the series that we had the previous two episodes. Let me find my notes. Give me one second. So we're bringing up the topic that it's not just coffee. It's about how you approach it and balance it with the rest of your life, no matter if you're a beginner, enthusiast, or a professional. So when we were talking about finding balance for the beginner, we were talking about carving out that time, and we were talking about finding balance for the enthusiast. We're talking about honing in that time and, you know, spending your time wisely. And I think some of that also comes into play when you think about it in a professional level. But also, I think it's easy because there are a lot more details that you're getting wrapped up in at the professional level.
And I was less than excited to talk about this particular aspect of it with just the two of us, since both of us are not coffee professionals. And so that's why having Jared here is super great, because, I mean, he can provide some perspective on fitting coffee into your life when you actually do it as a profession versus, you know, the nerds like us who just sit around and drink coffee all day and and talk about it and write about it and shoot photos of it or whatever, whatever we do. There's a whole professional aspect of it that Jared has a lot of familiarity with. And so we're super happy to have him on.
Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And when we're talking about a pro, now before we said, you know, how do we some signs to know if you're a beginner or signs to know you're an enthusiast. When you're a coffee pro, and we're not talking about like you're a professional, you've reached a level of enthusiasm that you are now called a professional coffee consumer. Like, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about somebody who works in or has some sort of place in the coffee industry. Jared could probably explain more about what sort of jobs there are in the business. I mean, you've come from, why don't we start there? Why don't we start from the inception of you in coffee? What's your story where it comes from coffee, and we'll bring it up into what Ruby Coffee Roasters is?
Well, I had a coffee job in college a little bit, just really basic, working in Madison, Wisconsin. And at the time, I didn't really know a whole lot about coffee. I remember a friend of mine worked at a shop, and he kind of introduced me to the idea that Kenyan coffee was special. And his name is Neil. He's a great guy. He works with Kickapoo Coffee now, actually, here in Wisconsin.
Neil Olson, right?
Yeah. And so he was a college friend, and he explained, you know, hey, Kenyan coffee is kind of different, you know, unique. And so I was like, oh, cool. You know, can you grind me some and I'll throw it in my freezer? you know, so that was a long time ago. That was probably 10 years ago. Wow. And anyway, he like made me a macchiato the first time, and it was great. But I sort of put that, it wasn't important to my life at the time, and it wasn't something that I really grasped onto. So anyway, I guess about a few years later, I moved to Los Angeles after graduating from college, and I started working at Intelligentsia, and they had just opened. So I started washing dishes at the Silver Lake Coffee Bar, and was just pretty amazed from the beginning with the amount of effort and importance they were putting into sourcing and roasting and everything and preparation. So it really kind of sucked me in. And that happened really fast. And there was a lot of opportunity in LA at the time with Intelligentsia, because they were growing, and, you know, they had just opened a roasting facility, and that was kind of growing, and they needed some help. So I don't know, at the time, I guess, and this is kind of leads into a little bit of advice as a tangent, but I found Jeff Watts and Kyle Glanville and some other people at the time to be, you know, really great people that I could learn from and listen to and get some guidance from. And so I'd always ask Jeff, you know, like, man, I'd see him when he would get back from some of his trips and sometimes come through LA, and he'd be showing me pictures of, like, I remember this one time we went out to dinner and he was showing me pictures of these kids in, I think it was in like Papua New Guinea or something. And just showing me these, and it was just like, wow, you know, this guy is out there on the frontier, you know, doing great work. And that's awesome that we can be part of that. So I always was really fascinated by that kind of social impact side and the kind of adventure and excitement of coffee. So I'd ask Jeff, you know, Jeff, what should I do? What can I do? I want to be involved with some of this stuff a little bit more. You know, like a lot of things in life, they don't just happen. You have to make them happen. You have to work towards that opportunity and commit yourself to something for it to open itself up to you. So I found myself kind of at this juncture. So Jeff started talking to me about this idea, this roaster apprentice idea. And I kind of, at the time, wasn't really excited about like having a 9-to-5. I kind of thought that I liked the flexible barista schedule and the idea of like scooping coffee into bins and, you know, being a warehouse assistant. It didn't sound like what I really wanted. But my girlfriend at the time, who is my wife now, she sort of said, look, you know, Jeff knows who you are. He knows what you want to do, and he wouldn't sort of steer you in the wrong direction. So maybe you should think about this some more. And so it was like a matter of, you know, a couple days after I talked to Jeff, and I was like, look, man, I'm interested in this. Anyway, I started roasting. Well, not right away, but I started working at the roasting spot, weighing out coffee and learning from those guys, some great guys.
And where was this, or what was this for?
That was for Intelligentsia in Los Angeles in 2000, probably 2008. And I did that for about a year. I was getting kind of burned on LA. I don't know, just wanted to change. So then my wife and I decided to move to Portland. So started talking to Doug at Intelli, and I said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to be moving, and let me know if there's a possible fit. And right around that time, they had this growing kind of wholesale thing happening in the Northwest. And so anyway, I ended up becoming their Northwest rep for a little while. So I did that, living in Portland or the Portland area, and I learned a lot more about what is important to cafe owners and what is important to, you know, customers and how that stuff kind of works. And it's really interesting to be, you know, talking to people that are opening cafes and have existing cafes, and they're trying to figure out, you know, how to serve their customers. And so, you know, it was a kind of a shift for me to go from being inside the roasting world, you know, really diving in on a day-to-day kind of, you know, really focused level with the coffees, to stepping back and going, okay, what works for people, and seeing where those two overlap or don't. And I guess then my last job was I shifted over to Seattle, and I was director of coffee and coffee buyer for a company that's been around for a while called Cafe Ladro. And they were looking to make some significant changes and step away from using coffee roasted by another company, and decided to do their own roasting. So it's an opportunity for me to go buy coffee and build a menu and get some buying experience and kind of help turn a brand around and retail experience around. So that was most recent prior to Ruby. So then Ruby 2013, I moved back to Wisconsin, where I'm from, to launch this Colorful Coffees thing. We started roasting out at my house, and that took a little while to get some approvals and permits, but nothing too serious. And here we are now. We have a new space, and we've been here since, I guess, since June. I don't know. You guys probably have more questions. Sorry, I kind of glossed over a lot of things.
Yeah, Jared was kind of there in the very beginning of me kind of just doing discovery of coffee. And
right. I talked you into buying a refractometer.
Yeah, we talked a lot about extraction numerically and whatnot. But to be honest, I found that to be a useful tool, only to understand, you know, how it displays what I'm tasting in the cup, and then to tweak from there, because it's easy for, and not that there's a problem with it, but, and I think I've told the story before, but when I was first brewing with the Kalita, I would always just assume that the Kalita brewed these really deep and intense coffees, you know, that the flavors were always more vivid, and some coffees didn't work so well in this brewing device. But what I came to find out is that all my brews were actually like 23% extraction and super high strength. I just found it interesting to kind of rope in an understanding of that, because I did see myself, and I still do kind of see myself, moving towards hopefully getting a job in the coffee industry. And I like to kind of have an idea of how to make all my brewing more consistent. Again, this is kind of a long tangent, but Jared's kind of always been there with that. And so he's always been approachable in that manner. And that, so that for that, I've always been thankful, and I'm glad that he's on with us.
Cool. Thank you.
So there end up being a lot of problems that beginning brewers face. We talked about that a couple episodes ago, trying to develop maybe a coffee routine for themselves, or, you know, figure out what kind of brew methods to use. There are problems that coffee enthusiasts face, you know, where they might spend a ridiculous amount of time or an overmuch amount of time focusing on coffee, or maybe they might spend a crazy amount of money buying a lot of coffees that maybe they shouldn't be, or I don't know, whatever. There are problems that professionals definitely face. and I've seen it, even though not being a professional myself. And so I wonder, Jared, could you talk just a little bit about like some problems that you see professionals facing in terms of like how they fit coffee into the rest of their life?
Yeah. Well, it's a big question. You know, I think, you know, there are some things that I would have said a year ago or 2 years ago, and then a whole different amount of, you know, range of things that I would say right now, you know, as a business owner, it's kind of a whole different world. But thinking about what drives us and thinking about what's important to us is, you know, I mean, these are life lessons, these are coffee lessons, these are things that apply to a lot of people, but, you know, having a focus. And for me with Ruby, over the course of the last 2 years, especially, you know, I thought I knew a lot of things when I was going into it. And I did. I knew a lot about what kinds of coffees I wanted to source. You know, I had this colorful coffees slogan kind of mapped out in my head. And I was really excited about all of that. But then I had a meeting early on with my with a local sort of small business development counselor who was referred to me by another friend. And I thought, okay, this ought to be interesting. And she just like peppered me with all these questions that I didn't want to hear. And it's great. I guess that's where I would separate it almost into, you know, the next conversation, which is, okay, let's talk about business ownership and running a business and how you get that to work for you with work-life balance as well, you know, outside of just being a professional. Because when you're a professional, at least, you know, you have the stability of working within, you know, you have a paycheck, you get paid an hourly wage, you know, and the rest of it is kind of on someone else to worry about, you know.
Sure.
Whereas for me, it's, you know, it's all tied in together. But I mean, I love it. I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, complaining or anything. That's not it at all. But day to day, you know, some of the list of things that are on my mind, you know, we just did 25,000, you know, custom packages. That was the minimum for our new bags. And
which they look great, you know, by the way.
Thank you.
I love your new bags.
I'm really, I'm happy with them. You know, it's awesome. But some things that people don't realize, you know, is like that takes a, you know, it's like a $5,000 deposit, and then it's a 6-month warehouse agreement, and then I got to pay for the rest of them. And meanwhile, should start thinking about the deposit for the next batch, you know? And so it's just one of the many things that occupy my mind, you know, throughout the week. And, you know, Brian also asked about what it's, you know, building a menu and finding the right coffees. I mean, these are things that are all is just kind of floating in and out of my mind. And so, yeah, balance, you know, finding balance is important to not be overwhelmed and to appreciate what all the positive aspects of the business are without being driven down by, you know, being overwhelmed by all of the work.
So being a business owner, I mean, obviously you have an added level of responsibility. You know, you've got all these, I'm assuming you also have a staff and you have people that you're paying, and, you know, you've got all these other things that you're worried about, like with the website and orders and all things that you take care of.
Customers all over that we want to keep happy and that we rely on for our growth and progress.
Would you say that there's a less of a focus now on the coffee itself and more on sort of the operations side of things? Or are you still trying to find that balance of like focusing on the coffees as well as everything else?
I think it's more of everything. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm more focused on the coffees now. One of the great things about, well, I don't know, back and forth on that. I guess finding systems is important. And I mean, I think that that's a relevant point for this whole balance thing too, because without systems, I mean, it's funny because I wasn't a systems person. I was always, my personality type is, you know, like I said about meeting with that counselor, was cringing at systems and cringing at, you know, sort of being boxed in by things. But now I realize that that there's a comforting element to that, because then you know how things are going to be done. And I think that that's a, you know, can be applied to other aspects of this conversation too. But yeah, as far as focusing on the coffees, I mean, I was roasting last week, and I think that, you know, now we have two roasters, two roasting machines, and Matthew is my roaster guy. And so he and I are able to collaborate on the roast more. We review the curves together. We talk about these things a lot more. I mean, I think that I feel like I have a better sense of what a Ruby coffee is now than I did 2 years ago or a year and a half ago.
Would you say that one of the problems, I don't know if this is a problem that you did have, but it could be a problem that other people face too. I see we have this down here about finding a place that fits for whether it be your business or what you're trying to accomplish or your needs or the demand or whatever. But do you find that is a problem that people can get into, is not having a place or not having a place that is a fit for what they're doing?
Right. So the question is professionals finding a good workplace, right? I mean, I think that's a really challenging thing. I think that's, you know, ultimately can be the deciding factor over whether or not, you know, you're learning and progressing and feeling positive, or you're feeling kind of, you know, driven down and, you know, worked as a cog kind of in this machine. And that's going to vary for every individual. You know, they might vibe with the approach that a company has, or they might not, or they might have a manager that they don't, you know, enjoy working with, or an owner that they don't find that they have a mutual, you know, kind of common ground with. And for me personally, I think that those things have been have been positive for me in my experience. But I also, you know, I talk to a lot of people and they're like, look, I want to learn, I want to progress, I've got these ambitions, you know, what do I do? And, you know, because I think as far as finding balance, you know, I think not everybody is content with being a barista. And I don't want to say just a barista, because that's not it at all. Some people are totally happy with their role, you know, in serving coffee, and their, you know, that meets their needs. Other people want to do more. And that's a whole other path, you know, trying to figure out how to navigate working, I guess, your way up, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, right. even if somebody has, like, they're at a shop and maybe they're not exactly happy about the shop that they're working at, you know, I know of a few baristas or a few coffee professionals, at least here in town, who are actually, you know, they work at the shop that they work at. They're not entirely happy there, but they're kind of looking around and seeing, like, where they might go that they can, you know, that they can be a little bit more passionate or a little bit more driven about the products or the, you know, people that they're working with. Seems like even finding the right shop or the right business to become a part of or to work for could be a challenge for a lot of people.
It's a huge challenge. I think some people, I mean, you kind of, I guess, make a little bit of, I guess, a good point there, is that a lot of people, you know, don't feel like they're being inspired by the place they work. And, you know, that happens. One thing I guess I would encourage people to do is to talk to the business owner, talk to the manager and say, hey, I don't know, you know, maybe this isn't my fit, or, you know, I'm kind of feeling this way. And I mean, most responsive, you know, positive owners, like they should want to hear that. They should want to hear feedback. And maybe the professional, you know, this professional that we're talking about, maybe they would learn something. Maybe they would find, you know, I think that it's hard to have the level of understanding of what the business owner might be thinking about until you take the time to ask them and say, you know, I don't know, I'm not really feeling this coffee. And then maybe they'll say, well, hey, guess what? Like, I understand that, but we buy this coffee because it's a rad producer group and we're supporting them. And here's the deal. Like, it's a sweetness focused coffee, or, you know, whatever. I mean,
right.
It's great to try to meet people where they're at and keep an open mind.
Keeping an open mind, I think, is really important in just being an enthusiast, but also as a professional. Like, it feels like, you know, you go to a shop and nobody's going to know the coffees that a shop offers better than the people who work there. I feel like they should know, they should be the ones who know pretty well, like, what those coffees are doing, how they're performing and all those things. Do you see maybe a problem with people getting, or maybe not having an open enough mind about coffee, like seeing coffees outside of their own shop, or seeing,
absolutely,
you know, seeing brew methods that maybe they don't feature where they're at, or, you know, maybe that being a challenge that some people face.
It's a big
just
challenge.
Getting stuck with the way that your shop does something.
Well, and getting stuck in, you know, knowing what to read, what new information to read, or what not to read. You know, it's a lot to filter through right now with, you know, like, okay, there's this Coffee Hustle, there's Sprudge, there's, you know, Daily Coffee News, there's Roast Magazine, there's Barista Magazine, there's, you know, individual things that each company is putting out into the world. There's so much that how do you know what's relevant to you, and how do you decide, you know, what your approach is, your own distinct approach? But backtracking a little bit, I guess, you know, getting stuck in your way, having an open mind. I mean, I think we, you know, it's interesting. Like, we love, for example, to put coffees out into the world that are, in this day and age, you know, kind of cool, right? Like, we do a lot of pretty cool coffees, like washed Ethiopian coffees, washed Kenyan coffees. We are fortunate to roast a lot of those for a customer base that appreciates them. So that's awesome. I love that. But I'll add that, you know, I also personally, and with Ruby, I want to support other profiles too. You know, like, I don't want to have a menu that's just acid forward, you know, lively floral coffees. I mean, that's fun, but there are coffees out there, you know, from El Salvador that we really enjoy, some coffees from Guatemala. And some of those can be also acid forward too. But, you know, I think some people get so hung up on, especially people that don't have a lot of experience, they think, you know, oh, if it doesn't scream with acidity, it's not a great coffee. Well, I mean, that's your subjective opinion. That's fine. But, you know, I would encourage those people to have an open mind, to try something else and see where those coffees fit.
That kind of goes into the next thing about whether or not it's a problem for people to get caught up in their ways, and there's pros and cons to being in their ways. And this is, I would say, this goes into how someone brews or suggests a brew, but also I would think roasting profiles, right? Because then there might be people who do get caught up in the professional level of, I mean, you basically just hit it, roasting only, you know, to first crack and then stop.
You know, I kind of go back and forth on that. Ultimately, I feel like we live in an age now where there's so many options that it's kind of like, that's fine. I mean, if some people just want to drink those coffees, I guess I'm kind of backtracking a little from my, or flip-flopping from my last statement. But I kind of am thinking, you know, there are enough roasting companies out there that are roasting super light. There are other roasting companies roasting super dark. There are other ones that are kind of in the middle. And there's just kind of something for everyone. And I guess the takeaway point isn't so much that, you know, anything should change or should be different. It's just have respect, you know, respect the people that think, you know, more developed coffee is really awesome. And vice versa, you know, hopefully those people will respect the people that really like, you know, super, super, super light roasted coffees.
Do you think that all the details that you have to think about, whether it be, you know, wanting to highlight a region a certain way, or about thinking about wholesale, or thinking about certain coffees that come in, you need to get them out, any details, you think about what you're going to serve in your tasting room and the roastery, orders, all that stuff. Do you think that with all that goes on, it's easy to forget that coffee is enjoyable? Do you think that as a professional that is something you get caught up in?
I think it's a problem. It's a potential problem that should be actively avoided. For me, I don't feel that at all. I love my coffees. I love coffee more now than I ever have. I understand it better. Or I try to. I'm able to do more exciting things now than I could before. I mean, when Ruby was first starting, you know, and I was buying 100 pounds of some coffees, as my first time I bought, you know, Aguacate, it was like my only Colombian release of the season. And I bought 8 bags of it, you know, whatever that is, that's 1,300 pounds or something. I don't know. Somebody will do the math. And that's fun. But, you know, this year we're going to buy a lot more Colombian coffee. And so, you know, we're scheduled out to have probably five distinct micro lots from different farmers in different parts of Colombia this year that are exclusive micro lots to our menu. And so I don't want that to sound like, hey, I'm a Ruby pitch or whatever, but you know, that's the flip side of progress and business ownership is that
you're excited about Colombian coffee and you want to continue serving.
Yeah, well, and I'm actively involved in the sourcing of these coffees that are going to be really awesome on our menu. And I get to talk to my customers about them. You know, we get to roast more of them. We get to understand them better. I don't feel that at all. I don't feel like I'm losing an excitement. I think it's just the opposite. I think I'm just headed in the direction of where I'm just going to be more personally engaged with all of our offerings. So, yeah, I'm honestly having a lot of fun with it. And that really, for me, is what makes this all, I mean, if that's not a component, then I don't understand why it's worth doing this. You know, I mean, it's gotta be fun.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the opposite. The flip side of that is what I see sometimes, maybe not with business owners specifically, but with baristas or maybe even roasters or people involved in other parts of the coffee industry, you know, they start out and they have this really significant amount of excitement about something like, you know, this is new, this is fresh, this is sort of the honeymoon phase. And then they begin, you know, kind of their working relationship with coffee. And somewhere along the way, I see sometimes, and not just with coffee professionals too, this also applies to a lot of other jobs, some amount of cynicism or some amount of just frustration about your passion as it's not met with the passion of maybe your customers. Or, you know, I've mm-hmm. talked to a barista who said, you know, he used to get really frustrated that he would work on a beverage for, you know, the amount of time that he would. And then he would watch a customer dump like half of it out and then fill it up with cream. And that would cause him to become really frustrated and at some level kind of cynical. And then he kind of, you know, stepped back and realized that piece that everybody has their own way that they are going to enjoy coffee. And, you know, he kind of let go of that a little bit and began to just enjoy the experience of it more. But maybe that, I don't know, maybe that sense of cynicism or just frustration that your level of passion is not reflected in your customers. I don't know if that fits into it at all.
Yeah, that's absolutely, yeah. But then, you know, that barista, for example, if they're a little out of touch with, like, think about, okay, where does his salary come from? You know what I mean? How are these people getting paid? What supports a cafe? What supports, you know, talk about coffee community in progress, like lattes and, yeah. You know, that's fine. I mean, you have to be able to have, you don't have to. I would encourage people to, and this is understanding that I have a lot more, you know, closer, deeper relationship to now that I'm a business owner. But, you know, you got to think about what's driving the business and creating opportunities. You know, I mean, yeah, this person has a coffee job because people are coming in and spending money on coffee. And if you understand that, I think then it can help accomplish that, you know, that space of peace that you're talking about with going, okay, well, yeah, I guess it doesn't matter. This person's coming in spending $4, you know, every day and throws a dollar in the tip jar, whatever, you know,
yeah.
They're having a good time. I'm having a good time.
Yeah. And maybe just finding those opportunities to kind of just connect back to what you're doing. Maybe as a practical tip, like kind of like you've said, I mean, you've traveled to Origins and, you know, you're seeing your customers on a regular basis and you're making these connections with people and sort of it. I feel like that's probably contributing to your sense of enjoyment over coffee in general. But maybe it's easy just to lose that connection of like what you're actually working so hard to do and the people who are enjoying it.
Yeah.
Or the people who are producing it, even, I guess, even, you know, getting back to the source.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I'm fortunate with Ruby to have an opportunity to do this. You know, we've been met with a lot of positive response and excitement. And so, you know, it enables me to continue on the path that we set out on, which, you know, is to focus more on distinct menu and these fun coffees and trying to work with, you know, really cool customers, or quality focused customers. So I'm fortunate, you know, not everybody has that path. Not everybody has that, that support group to be able to buy the coffees they're excited about. You know, they have to look at a lot of you know, coffee roasting companies. They have to look at what survival, you know, and what's going to help them, you know, survive. And they go, okay, well, look, people like whatever, we got to do that. And they have to make, you know, maybe they have to make compromises that they didn't want to. And then that puts them in this bad cycle of, you know, that compromise turns into this thing, you know, that sucks the life out of them and makes them, suddenly they wake up one day and they're roasting coffee they're not excited about for customers they're not excited about. And they're going, what happened? You know, I don't want to sound doom and gloom, but
no,
no, that's the point. That's the point of this, though. You know what I mean? Is that there are these problems that if you let just kind of build up and it doesn't seem like there's much going on, at some point in time, you've like that, in listening to you talk on this episode, I've realized, man, he's like, it is, I'm glad we got him on because he's seen a lot and he understands the balance and the push and pull and how to kind of tone that in. But what you're amounting to right now would be some of these extremes that somebody might see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, kind of moving into some tips that are helpful can potentially lessen that and get somebody back into the enjoyment or the excitement of that.
Yeah. Totally. You know, I mean, here's a strange kind of, not a strange example, but here's an example of a choice that I made. And it wasn't a hard choice, but someone called me up and they said, hey, look, we've got somebody, a potential customer that wants to buy quality coffee, in a K-cup. We're going to package it into a K-cup. And I'm going, oh, you know, obvious, you know, knee jerk reaction here is, okay, you know, this conversation's over. However, I was like, oh, okay, like, what are you looking for? You know, and I talked to him a little bit just out of curiosity and, you know, got off the phone and I was just thinking like, wow, you know, this is a trap. This is a trap that, you know, if I didn't have focus on what we're doing and what we're, you know, what's working for us and who I am and what I'm trying to do, this is the kind of trap that people fall into. And it's not just coffee roasting. This is all kinds of things. And it's like, you know, they look at, okay, well, hey, suddenly I could be roasting 1,000 pounds a week for this K-cup and, you know, oh, the margins wouldn't be as good, but whatever, you know, I'll do it, you know, maybe not. But then I started thinking, okay, 6 months from now, you know, for example, not that I was even considering, I don't even want to sound like I was considering it, but I was just entertaining the sort of process that somebody might go through. And, you know, you got to think about the long game, you know, not the long game. I mean, long games are fun, but the long game, which is how am I going to feel in a year when I'm dragged down by having to produce coffee I'm not excited about, you know, whatever, working with customers that you're not excited about. One of the lessons that I've learned from a business owner standpoint is for balance and for important, you know, the focus on what's working and what's making you happy is to say no, you know, sometimes to learn when to say no and to learn when the opportunities are not healthy and they're going to be unhealthy for your business. They're going to be unhealthy for, you know, your employees and yourself. And there's a lot of these things that happen to us all the time. And saying no and moving on is important.
I feel like saying no is one of the biggest challenges that we have, not just in coffee, but just in general life challenges, I guess, is to say no. Because, you know, you're viewed as as a mm-hmm. supportive,
as a human, you don't want to disappoint
right,
somebody.
Exactly. Like you don't want right. to, you don't want to disappoint somebody. You're viewed as, you know, a supportive member of the community if you always say yes. But, you know, but when you actually say no, sometimes it's the absolute best thing that you can do.
Absolutely. You're saving everybody a bunch of time. And I guess to carry through with that kind of, you know, example is not only are you, you know, being dragged down potentially by this customer that's not working really well for your business or whatever, but you got to think about the sacrifice and compromise that that's going to put on your customers that are working really well for you.
Yeah.
And like you said, that's another life lesson. You got to think about the push and pull and the give and take and how you're going to feel at the end of the day.
I think it's kind of interesting, you know, this whole saying no thing. When you moved out and basically started Ruby, you mentioned already that you were roasting out of your house.
Yeah.
You know, being a business owner out of your house, how were you able to say no? Like, how were you able to draw the lines of like, okay, now I'm working. This is the time where I'm going to have yeah. to do this sort of, you know, adventure. And then, okay, now I'm a dad. I've got two,
right.
I got two kids, you know, I got a wife, I got a family. We're in dad mode now. Like, how was that transition?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It was hard. I think, you know, with production and coffee, there are some lines that sort of boundaries that sort of create themselves, you know, because it's like, okay, well, if I need to get coffee to Portland by Friday, I've got to roast it Monday and package it Monday and ship it out. So then you start to build a schedule out of that. You know, I think I'll echo again the importance of systems here mm-hmm. and efficiency. And I think that I was forced during that time to create some boundaries between the two worlds that that carry through, you know, today. So like right now, this might change, but at least for now, we don't roast on Fridays. And my two full-time guys don't work on Fridays. I mean, if they do other work, that's up to them, but they don't work for me on Fridays. I you know, that was something that I kind of set up early on because I didn't really have to work on a Friday. I mean, I might have to catch up on some books or, you know, I find myself now kind of using Friday as a flex day where it's like, okay, I can have a meeting if I need to or take a call if I need to, but I try to work less. And it's great. I mean, it's important. You know, if you set that up ahead of time, you don't get sucked in as much.
So I guess then I have to ask, why back to Wisconsin and why Nelsonville? How does that play into balance for you, or does it even?
As we were growing and needing more space, we started looking at a variety of options of where to move the Ruby roasting spot to give us some growth potential, more space for storage, and have a space where we could hopefully bring people out and have them experience our coffee in a small retail setting. And we wanted to do that in a place where we were excited to be and where we could have this kind of like sense of community and to be doing that in a place that was inspiring. And so I started looking at like some business parks, which sorry, I don't even know why I'm saying that. I looked at a business park near us in a small town called Amherst, and you know, it felt right for some reasons, but then there was other part of me that was like, man, this isn't really working. And so I started focusing on some more like warehouse spaces in a few small towns, kind of in a small circumference around where we were roasting. And there's some really cool little towns around us, some historic places and cool buildings. And Nelsonville's there, and it's this space that it's a small town of 200 people just outside of Stevens Point, 15 minutes from Stevens Point in central Wisconsin. And in our town, we've got some beautiful old buildings, and there's a small river. And in our space, we've got a lot of trees and stuff around us. And so it's just really peaceful, and it's a great place to work. And so we decided to move on it and move forward. And so we, over the course of about 4 months,
built out that space and made it ready for us. Now we have our roasting and tasting room there. And I love it. It's peaceful. And on a busy day, if we're pumping out all these orders, you know, it's just, if we start to feel a little stressed or something, you know, I walk over to the post office around the, you know, it's like a couple hundred feet from Ruby, and I walk through this small town, and it's just, I think it's calming. I think it gives me perspective. I think it's peaceful. Definitely enforces the idea of, you know, having balance and not getting too stressed out in the moment, taking some distance from it all. So that's why we're in Nelsonville, and we're happy to be there.
Do you find it important, or do you take the time to brew? I don't want to get attacked for this. Hopefully I don't, to brew non-Ruby coffees, or like, do you, or even just going into the house and just brewing for the wife, or just to enjoy and entertain guests, or to think less about,
oh yeah,
you know, sometimes how it looks back to Ruby, or even going to a shop that might be, I don't know, in other parts of Wisconsin or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, totally. The answer is yes, it's important. And yes, I do. And I think, I mean, I'm on the same page with what you're getting at, I think. And it's that, you know, Sundays right now, I have started brewing, not exclusively, but for the last many Sundays, I've been brewing our creamery blend at home. That's a seasonal blend that we do here at Ruby. Developed a little bit more. A lot of people use it for espresso. It's great. It's really sweet. And it's more of a like regular, normal coffee. And so I will brew that on my Bonavita brewer. And I'm not looking at my like bloom time. And I'm not looking at, I don't have my nice scales at home. I make sure that my water is pretty good and that my grind is nice. And I put it in the brewer and I push a button and then I drink a cup of coffee and I really love it. And it's, for me, it's like one of the things I look forward to because it just falls in line with everything else we've been talking about, which is you got to have perspective. And so for me, Sunday morning, hanging out with my kids and drinking normal coffee and not really putting too much thought into, you know, is this a great extraction of, you know, this particular coffee, or is the roast on point or whatever, is like a huge relief. And I love it.
I find that to be really refreshing, by the way. You know, just to think about somebody who's a coffee professional having to focus and tweak and, you know, monitor and log and, you know, all the stuff that you end up having to do with a coffee, but then to just throw it in the brewer and hit go and just enjoy it, I think is something that I think we as coffee enthusiasts can also learn a good lesson from.
Oh, and the question about other roasters, I think, is a good one too. And I drink other roasters' coffee for different reasons all the time. And, you know, sometimes we'll do comparative cuppings here and see, okay, you know, what are these guys doing with that coffee, or how are they approaching it? And just being interested to see, you know, where roasters that we know really well are changing or shifting, or how they're developing something, or, you know, if we happen to know that maybe it's a same lot that we bought as another roaster, it's always interesting to kind of compare the two. Yeah, I mean, perspective, you know, again, is something that is important.
Yeah. Well, and then even you mentioned before about having kind of mentors who helped kind of shape where you are from very early on and seeing the social element of things. And then and I mentioned a little bit about, you know, our relationship, too. So do you find it both practical or important for people to include their coworkers or the customers that they have at whatever level to help grow or keep the flame alive on their enjoyment as somebody, as a coffee professional?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. You know, around here, I'm always interested to see, you know, my electrician, for example, never drank coffee in his life. And as you know, we all encounter those people, right? And they're kind of these like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And maybe it's a health reason. Maybe it's a who knows what. And so my electrician never drank coffee. Here we are, you know, running electricity throughout my whole new space in March, April, May, and, you know, hooking up my new robot and all this stuff. And I was in here, I spent a lot of time in here, and I'm brewing pots of coffee. And, you know, he was like, man, that smells pretty good. Maybe I should try some. Maybe I should just give it a shot. Never been a coffee drinker. This dude's like in his probably almost 50 or something. And turns out after a few weeks of trying a few things here and there, he decided he loves Ethiopian coffee and like our Guji Raga and some of these coffees were his favorites. And I was just like, are you, you know, like, wow, like you don't realize that's pretty unusual, you know, to start off kind of loving coffees like that. So I think it's important, like there's a few points in there, open-mindedness. And I think, you know, giving people like letting people, giving people having kind of like a blank slate to have an experience without you imparting your own thoughts, you know, because like a lot of us have been told over and over again, okay, someone isn't really a drinker of craft coffee. They got to start with, you know, a big, sweet El Salvador, a big, sweet something, you know, Brazil, right? Because it's supposed to imitate the flavors of a heavier roast or something like that. That's, I remember hearing those things and telling people those things. And I've been finding that's not, you know, another big factor is just letting people experience coffee without you trying to tell them what they should be experiencing. And I've been finding that, you know, that kind of feedback is refreshing and important. And it's something that I really value.
And that's sort of recently you guys have opened up another aspect of your business. Is that true? With your tasting room?
Yeah. We open on Saturdays from 8 to noon, and it's an opportunity for us to serve local people and people that are visiting or coming through the area. And, you know, actually, as I was just saying what I was just saying, I was kind of channeling a few interactions that I've had here at the tasting room with people that I found if I gave them the opportunity to have a positive experience with a coffee that might be a little wild, you know, Reiko or Cochere or Guji or something, mm-hmm. that if I just let them experience it, that a lot of times it goes better than it would if I say, hey, so this is a really adventurous coffee, you know?
Yeah, don't lead them, just sort of listen and see where they go with it.
Yes, yeah.
Jared, we really appreciate you taking the time to come out here. I know a lot of people at I Brew My Own Coffee, they've hooked up onto your subscription or they're really big fans of you. So it's just great to get somebody else's insight in this. And a lot of what you said doesn't even necessarily have to relate to a coffee professional. It just really helps with kind of thinking about balance. So really, really appreciate taking your time to come on with us.
Where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, we are Ruby Roasters on the social media or Ruby Coffee Roasters on Facebook. And if you go to the website, rubycoffeeroasters.com, you will see links to those things there. And thanks for all the support and to all the subscribers who might be listening out there. Thank you guys for signing up. That's really one of the things that we love doing a lot because we get to select these awesome coffees and send them out to people that are really excited to receive them. And so it's just kind of an awesome match. So thank you all and have an awesome day. Have fun.
So guys, we're going to ask if these sort of things are questions that you might wrestle with. So does this describe you? Are you a coffee professional? And are these sorts of things some things that you struggle with? Are you having to try and find that balance? And what have you seen to help you find that balance? So also, what advice might you have? So Jared had some awesome points, but if you also have points of things that you've noticed coffee professionals struggling with and how they could get out of those sorts of things, let us know. We use hashtag IBMOCTalk with our questions. And also, next episode, we're going to be doing a wrap-up about coffee beginners, coffee enthusiasts, and coffee professionals and how they interact with one another, they play off of each other. So any other questions that are lingering from those other episodes, please chime in the questions, or tips, or some of the struggles that you've seen in your journey as being a coffee beginner, coffee enthusiast or coffee professional.
Thanks everybody for tuning in. You can find us on Instagram at @IBrewMyOwnCoffee. You can find us on Twitter at @BrewMyOwnCoffee. You can interact with us via email through our website. Just go to iBrewMyOwnCoffee.com and click the Contact Us link at the top of the page. You can also review us on iTunes if you'd love to do that. We'd definitely appreciate it. Thanks a lot, everybody, for listening, and happy brewing, everybody.
So long, everyone.